This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Didn't mean to step on your intro. Your mic's not on. Nah, turn the every mic's on. Anyway.
Put some respect on that man's name. Well done, Beltway.
Hall of Famer Jacob Calvin Meyer joins us courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline.
He knows how to hit the cutoff guy, and he knows what base to throw to.
And you know how to step on me throwing the sponsor. Wow.
What was the sponsor again?
Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline.
I love Window Nation. Yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah.
They know how to throw to the right base,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they do. Jacob, good afternoon. Thank you, as always, for joining us. I guess we'll start broad and then and get more go from micro to macro or macro to micro. But this team through 10 games, your thoughts?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for having me on, as always. This is going to be a fun one. I have a naked child that I'm changing her.
Nice.
Right,
nice.
So let's see how this goes. Just a massive poop, man. They get older and the poops get harder, and it's just, it's really something. Speaking of poop, the Orioles.
Yes.
So, yeah, listen, 10 games through, it's a small sample. There's been some high highs and some low lows. I think I've been surprised by how sloppy they've looked at times. The conditions in Kansas City didn't help, but also the Royals didn't seem to be too concerned with the conditions. The rotation's margin for error is really small, and so when the outfielders don't catch fly balls or they don't hit cutoff men, things can really spiral out of control. The bullpen lacks a ton of flexibility, which is going to be a problem down the line. It hasn't really been so far. And the lineup is really still boom or bust. So through 10 games, not looking too great, but it is a small sample.
There's obviously things that can be quantified and things that can be algorithm to death, right? And then there's things that old school scouts will tell you from having eyes on a player, you know, who you're thinking of acquiring for a long period of time. Like, they might tell you, he's so jacked up he can't move laterally anymore. Like, they might tell you, boy, he doesn't really get a break on the ball. And, you know, like, if you even thought about playing him in center field, you're crazy because he's not even a corner outfielder. He's a DH. Like, he doesn't always throw to the right base. He doesn't really hit the cutoff man. Oh, and when you need him to slide to get a run, he doesn't do that either. Like, it seems to me some of their fundamental failings, and this stuff's been going on since the middle of last year, might come from the way they build their team, right? Like, maybe that's part of the reason their trade deadline acquisitions don't hit that, like, don't click that much, because they're willing to take a risk on Eloy Jimenez, who's DHing at Durham right now. In AAA. Like, am I crazy? Or are we far enough into this now where you can look at how they build things and say there's things they care about and things they think they can get by on, and the eye test stuff, the bird dog stuff, keeps biting them in the ass?
Yeah. My typical response to that question when you say, am I crazy, is...
Yes.
Yes, but maybe not in this instance. Listen, you're addressing Tyler O'Neill here, right?
Mm-hmm. Amongst others. I mean, Laureano's not good defensively anymore either. I mean, I could have told you that, but...
Yeah, him moving laterally isn't great. He still has a cannon, which is helpful. But listen, Tyler O'Neill is no longer a premier defender like he was several years ago. And if you look at the money that they paid him, they're not paying him to be a premier defender. You know what really stood out to me this week was how much this team misses Colton Gallagher in the outfield, because this is a bad outfield when he's not out there. Cedric Mullins is a good but not great center fielder.
Yes.
Tyler O'Neill right now is
a DH.
Probably a below average outfielder. I mean, it's tough to judge the Kansas City series too much, because the first day especially, he had a really bad day in right field. Those are also the worst conditions that any outfielder is going to play in all season. And then Heston Kerstad doesn't catch a ball that just obviously needs to be caught, but, you know, I don't exactly know what happened there. We never really got the chance to talk to him on that fly ball. But is there something to the fact that I think the margin for error for this team is smaller, and that's when the little things get heightened and they haven't done the little things well this year? I think there is some truth to that. But does that mean that they can't start doing the little things better? I don't think that that's the case.
Jacob, there was a lot of talk yesterday about the lineup and how the Orioles went very righty-heavy against Chris Bubich, who has reverse splits. But also, Jackson Holliday was swinging a hot bat. Heston Kjerstad had hits in back-to-back games. And Cedric Mullins, their hottest hitter, not being in the lineup. Were there any questions from you about the lineup construction?
Wait, there was a lot of talk yesterday about the lineup?
Yeah. Yeah.
Reverse splits, lefty, yeah, we don't care about that. Yeah.
Jacob, there was nothing on Twitter about this.
Yeah, nothing at all. Guys, actually, I'm really happy you still had me on today after I was called a North Korean propagandist Jesus. All day yesterday.
Who said that?
People on Twitter were very angry about with the
at you?
Right. We don't have to get into it. It's not about me. The lineup. So I think everybody's eyebrows were raised when they saw the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
What Brandon Hyde said after the game is fair to a degree, right? They did go out and acquire these right-handed bats. These guys do need to hit against lefties when they're in the lineup. I just think most people would agree that they went one step too far with the righty-heavy lineup. And the weak link yesterday was having Jorge Mateo in center field, okay? I understand that that's the benefit of hindsight, but I think a lot of people looked at this and said, man, there's a way around not having Jorge Mateo in center field today, so maybe you don't have to do it, especially when you're playing in a massive outfield. The dude has played like four games in center field in the past 3 or 4 years, and the wind is swirling like crazy, and you've already had a terrible outfield series. So to put him out there was definitely, definitely surprising, and there was an easy way around it, okay? You could have just put Ramon Laureano in center, which would not have been fantastic either, but he certainly catches that fly ball. And then you start Heston Kjerstad in left field, who had a left hit the day before against a lefty who has reverse splits. And Hyde mentioned that lefty reliever on Saturday had reverse splits. And if you really need to get Jorge Mateo in the lineup for whatever reason, you can put him at second base and you can DH Jordan Westberg, who you've already had to give a day off to because you said he's super banged up and we're, you know, only a couple games into the season. The part of the discourse yesterday, which was frankly insane, is that it is a crime against humanity that they gave Cedric Mullins a day off. Cedric Mullins, even in 2021, when he had a 30-30 season, he didn't play every single game. They gave him about 15 or 16 days off from playing center field that season. Last year, he was a platoon player who never played against lefties. And the year before that, he had two lower body injuries that derailed his season. And so far this season, he's played four games on turf, traveled twice, and then played in terrible conditions in back-to-back days, and they have three righties coming up. So the notion that sitting Cedric Mullins is like the craziest decision in the world was what I didn't understand about the discourse yesterday.
Talking with Jacob Calvin-Meyer, it's Inside Access here on the Fan. Let's talk about something positive. What did you think of Sagano on Saturday, and is this something you feel confident he can replicate?
Yeah, it wasn't surprising to me or most people who saw him in spring. Can he replicate that? Absolutely. Do I think that there's like massive upside with him? I don't. Yeah. And that's okay. This rotation probably needs some upside, but you're not going to get it from a 35-year-old that you signed, you know, from Japan for $13 million. But this rotation, as it's currently constructed, in the first half of the season especially, they just need their starters to go 5 or 6 innings and survive so that they can save the bullpen and keep the offense in games. If this rotation goes out on a consistent basis and goes 5 and change and gives up 3 runs, they'll rank in the bottom 10 in the majors in ERA, but this team should still win a ton of games. I don't know if this rotation is going to do that, but if they do that and they still don't win games, it's not going to be because of the rotation. It's going to be because of other factors on this team. And then that's just really the beginning of the season. I think the second half, when Grayson gets going, when Bradish comes back, that's when you maybe see some more upside with the rotation. But in the first half of the season, I just think they need to get by. And Sagano is somebody who I think can be a consistent guy for them in the rotation.
Shocker. I want to go back to the misery for a second and the lineup, because I want to get your take on this and get you on the record here, because when people, I guess, weren't attacking you, and they were probably attacking me, but I don't look at my mentions. They were attacking Hyder. So I just want to get your take on this, because, like, I think if you're attacking Brandon Hyde and you think that this isn't a complete Michael Elias production, we're not watching the same thing. Like, I don't think Brandon Hyde decides to take their 1-1 bonus baby and sit him on the bench while he's hitting really well, and Hyde's fighting him on it. Like, I don't think he decides to sit Cedric Mullins and Hyde's not, and Elias isn't 1,000% on board with it. Like, I don't think he's got Mateo in center field and not Laureano, who they just gave a lot of money to, unless Elias is entirely on board with it. Like, what says you?
Yeah, listen, there's no way to criticize Brandon Hyde without also criticizing Mike Elias and just the organization as a whole. This is not, you know, Billy Martin in the,
right,
you know, the 70s. Like, this isn't just Brandon Hyde 3 hours before the game sitting in his office with the pen and a napkin, right, saying, "Huh, I wonder what I'm going to do today."
Yeah.
That Sunday lineup was set on probably on Thursday, maybe even earlier. Okay, and that's what it kind of felt like to me.
Yeah.
Listen, and this is every team. This isn't a bad thing. Every team goes into a series and says, "Hey, this is what we think the series is going to play out to be," and you do need to remain nimble. In my head, I'm like, man, you should have probably watched the first two games where the wind is doing some crazy stuff. I mean, there were like 12 home runs hit in that series, guys, and almost none of them went out of the ballpark. The wind was crazy. The conditions were bad. It was freezing the first two games. And I think they just maybe didn't – I don't know. Maybe they didn't realize, hey, maybe we shouldn't put a guy who's not really a center fielder out there when we've had a terrible outfield series. But this is a combination of – does Brandon Hyde – listen, we don't know exactly how they make their lineups. But does Brandon Hyde have a say? Is he in the room? Of course he
sure.
is. But is he the last? Is he the majority opinion in that room? Probably not. And that's the way it is almost everywhere. And so this notion that it's like that like Brandon Hyde's goal every Sunday is just to ruin Orioles fans' day is just not the case. And that doesn't mean fans don't deserve to have criticisms. And I've had my own criticisms of that lineup yesterday. And I think Kershaw should have been in there. But it's not just a Brandon Hyde thing.
Well, and they pushed his buddy, Freddy Gonzalez, out and replaced him with a guy who's never been a bench coach before. So, I mean, I think that kind of tells you who's in charge, you know?
Yeah, but they also replaced him with one of his buddies.
One guy's got major league managing experience and told us he was politicking for Tommy Pham all year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's Robinson Chirinos.
Yeah. Well,
Jacob... go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, we're 10 games in, guys, and it's going to be a long year.
How'd the diaper change go?
Yeah.
She's I put on the better parent, Miss Rachel, on YouTube so that she wouldn't scream at me while I was on the phone. The diaper change went well. I would probably rate my performance as a C+. I might have forgotten the Depakote, so we're going to have to go back and
get some of that. Yeah.
But listen, it's early in the season. It's early in the season for me too.
You'd ask Jorge Mateo for help, but he might drop the baby.
You've got to have the full analytics on that diaper change.
Jacob, you're the best.
How many diapers can you change per hour blindfolded? I think we need the analytics on that.
Jason, we got to go. Jacob, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Coming up next, it's T-Bone time. TMI with TIM. What you got?
Yeah, we're going to continue to dive into the lineup yesterday, and it was not an isolated thing. We see this a lot when the Orioles go up against left-handed pitching. We'll get into it next on The Fan.
T-Bone time, TMI with TIM, and the floor is yours.
If nothing else, the Orioles are consistent in terms of setting their lineup depending on which hand the starting pitcher throws from. They faced a lefty yesterday in Chris Bubich. And, hey, he's a left-handed pitcher, so you got to load up on right-handed bats, right? The only true lefty in the Orioles lineup yesterday was Gunnar Henderson. That being said, it takes a couple clicks to look into Chris Bubich's baseball reference page and his splits.
Mm-hmm.
You look at his career splits. Lefties, 891 OPS against him. Righties, 753 OPS.
Pretty big difference.
That's his career. So let's just see what it was.
It's the difference between going to the Hall of Fame and being slightly above major league average.
Let's look at last year, what he did for the Royals. Lefties, 701 OPS. Righties, 553 OPS. So still a significant difference. Brandon Hyde, what was your thought process on that lineup?
Yeah, no, it's more of we acquired and signed right-handed guys to face left-handed starters, and we're going to give them an opportunity, especially early in the year here, to hopefully handle left-handed pitching for us.
This is where it gets to the human element that you like to bring up a lot, Jason. Jackson Holliday. He just had a three-hit game the prior game on Saturday.
Including one against a lefty, right?
Heston yes. Kerstad had hits in his last four games played, including three straight days.
Going opposite field to drive in runs.
Both of them, Jackson. Cedric Mullins, your hottest
hitter.
Best
hitter on the team right now.
And best defender. None of them in the lineup. And I want to see Jackson Holliday and Heston Kerstad prove to me, prove to everyone, that they cannot handle left-handed pitching. Let them prove that they cannot hit left-handed pitching. You can't just sit them against every single left-handed starter, and especially against a guy in which lefties hit better against him with the reverse splits. But this isn't just an isolated thing. And I get what Jacob's saying, and Seg can't play every single day, and all these. But this is every single time we see them go up against left-handed pitching. You don't see those guys. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Remember at the trade deadline last year when I kept pulling that Hyde clip up and I told you it was a cry for help, and then we had Freddie Gonzalez on the show and he basically said it was a cry for help. We don't need to get younger at the deadline. He's telling you it's not me. Okay, I'm deciphering what he said.
You're saying, a translator.
Hey, did you pay attention to the offseason? They added three marginal major league players. I'm not saying marginal bats. I'm saying marginal major league players, right? And they did it because they think we only really need to get better against lefties, and all the guys we already have are fine against righties. So, of course, I'm putting them in the lineup because it's not really my lineup. It's Mike's operation. Mike runs everything, and Mike thinks his guys should play against lefties, and we got a bunch of righties coming up. So it's my boss telling me, hey, these guys need to play. These are the guys we paid to get better. And he doesn't philosophically believe in young left-handed bats facing lefties. And do you want to know why I know? Because I watched Gunnar Henderson's first 50 to 70 games in the major leagues where, despite the uber prospect he was, they didn't let him face lefties. This is not Brandon Hyde's philosophy. This isn't Brandon Hyde's lineup. This is the Elias way. The Oriole way is dead. The Elias way. We don't care about defense. We don't care about reverse splits. We don't invest in pitching. We do what we want to do, and we double down on it. Doesn't matter how stupid O'Neill in right field looks. Let's try O'Neill in right field with a shortstop playing center field, with a contact pitcher who's no good on the road. Let's put him in the biggest ballpark with the most volume to cover if any outfield in the American League, and let's see what that looks like. How many pitches into the game did it take to see it was a moronic experience? But anybody who knows ball was pissed off about it before the game started because we could see it coming. Somehow at the warehouse, all their degrees, all their NASA aeronautical engineering, all their blackjack acumen, they can't get
black
it right.
Lung.
That's the Ravens, black line.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry for hijacking your TMI, if you two disagree, by all means.
No, and I know there was a ton of discourse, especially on Twitter, about Brandon Hyde. But
not
I think
Hyde.
We're all in agreement where
I don't think Brandon Hyde is Earl Weaver.
A
lot of this is not on him.
Yeah, and what he did with CNL Perez on Friday night was inexcusable.
That was something.
I mean, that was a joke.
Horrible.
Ben McDonald said, like a batter in, CNL doesn't look comfortable, and he faced nine more guys.
Dude, if he didn't get that third out, he'd still be up on the mound throwing. But, and he's not perfect, like you said, Ken, but I can't
this
put
is
it all on
organizational.
High. You can't put it all on high.
We're going to switch to Ravens coming up next. By the way, Jonas Schaefer is going to talk Ravens with us at 5 o'clock. David Ajabo. Any expectations for him whatsoever this season? We'll tell you next here on The Fan.
Well, you know, you want number one, I'm sure Harbs has talked about it. I can't get into the medical stuff, but I know he's working hard. Had a good spin today. I know he's running to the ball. I know he's striking blocks. I know he's showing signs that, you know, he's improving. I've had a torn ACL, and anybody's ever had one knows it takes time to come back. But he's out there fighting. He's out there scraping. And I just think that if he continues the way he's going, he's going to, you know, have success because he knows how to – he's got moves. Now we just got to, you know, give him the opportunity, you know, for him to be healthy to be able to execute those moves.
So that's Chuck Smith talking about David Ajabo as he was making his way back from injury. And we love Chuck Smith. Chuck Smith has presided over a defense that somehow without real dudes rushing the passer finished first and second in the league in sacks the last 2 years. But David Ajabo has really not made an impact. He had one sack in 2022, one in 2023, and then he had two last year. And so this is – he's a second-round pick, so there is no fifth-year option, not that they would give it to him. But – any expectations to see him make any kind of impact this season, Jason?
Zilch. If this draft goes like I think it might, and we'll talk a little bit more through the week about certain positions they may double down on or maybe even triple down. You have 11 picks. If it goes as I suspect it might, I just wonder if David Ajabo is part of the operation start stockpiling 2026 picks project, and that they might feel good enough about their depth. Plus, we all think if there was whatever is available for Calais, whether it was 3.5 or 4.5, it wasn't 5.5, yeah, right? Or he'd have been
probably close to 3 is my guess.
Yeah, whatever it was, that there's still that out there for some other veteran pass rusher. And, you know, always making decent money now, and Van Noy is still here. I just wonder if he's a kid who needs a change of environment where, look, somebody trades a sixth-round pick for you. There's no pressure. There's not the weight of, oh, we took him that high and we basically took a redshirt year thinking he's going to make a difference. You trade basically nothing for David Ajabo and he gets you 5 sacks as a situational pass rusher. You're calling that a win, right? That's very different than sort of how it's played out for him here. So I think a change of scenery, and that's not a slight on Chuck Smith because we all think he's done a great job. But like Chuck Smith was talking this guy up pretty big time not that long ago and basically talking about him in terms that were far ahead of Owe as a pass rusher, yes, as a polished pass rusher, as someone who understood the mental chess match of pass rushing. And it hasn't manifested itself in any way, shape, or form. And because he is still young and because he did have that pedigree prior to the injury at Michigan, maybe it's even Jim Harbaugh. Maybe it's Ravens Mike West. McDonald, right? Maybe it's out in Seattle, Ravens Pacific Northwest.
Maybe it's Anthony Weaver.
There you go. Ravens real south.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe
South
it's,
Beach.
I mean, maybe it's Denard.
Yeah.
Ravens Mid-South.
It's a lot of alums.
With Ajabo, anything he gives.
Where's Wink?
Wink's at Michigan.
He's still at Michigan. Yeah. He can't go back.
No eligibility.
Yeah. With Ajabo, anything he gives you, I almost just see it as a positive. Where he has to earn his way on the 53-man roster. He is not entering training camp where he's sharpied onto the depth chart. No, he has to earn it. And unfortunately for him, it's been injury setbacks, but even when he's been on the field, guys, the inability to set the edge, the inability to get after the passer.
See, that's just why I think they do it. I think that's why they do it. Because Robinson at least can do, right? Like, they don't want you pass rushing until they know
they like
that,
Robinson.
That you can hold it down on the edge, that we can ask you to do more than one thing. You know what I mean? Like, they're only going to accord that special privilege of you can be a one-trick pony for certain people. But, like, they didn't even accord that to Jadeveon Clowney.
Remember, Bobby DePaul once told us, don't listen to what they say. Watch what the tape tells you. They like Tavius Robinson.
They're going to draft a couple more kids. There'll be some kid they sign, a street free agent from Grand Valley State or whatever, who wows them at a rookie minicamp. Do you want to wait to have to cut him and trade him then? Or do you just try to trade him?
Oh, I wouldn't be.
You know what I mean? Or would you trade it sooner and just say, look, we don't think he's going to make our team. Like, we don't want to have to cut him. We don't want to have to practice
six
squat
next
him.
Year.
I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to look at this as a glass half full, we have seen guys in their contract years with the Ravens. The light bulb turns on.
Paul Kruger.
Yeah, exactly. He's the one that jumps out immediately. That being said, He was a healthy scratch for multiple weeks last week. A healthy scratch. Last year, excuse me. Yeah. I at this point, I'm just not expecting it. I don't think you can expect it.
It's a shame.
It is.
Because I think some of it's in his head. But, like, he flashed early. I remember he had a sack early last year. And we're like, wow, that's a real pass rush move. Maybe there's something there. And then it just disappeared again. Just gone.
And because there's not enough there in terms of the every down ability, I just don't see him playing on himself onto the field more, where he even gets to build up the confidence to get a lot of look-sees. And just with them having all this draft capital, they're not going to have like a couple of kids they fall in love with, again, including somebody they signed 2 hours after the draft who they think is better than a lot of the pass rushers that other teams took in the fifth round, because like that's just sort of how it goes. I don't know. I think the clock's ticking.
I think I'm with you. Like, it would not shock me if he's not on their roster in September.
I mean, what if they trade him to move up in a round during the draft?
They could do that.
To get a particular pass rusher in the third round who they don't think is going to be there at the end of the third round.
Yeah.
And we always say all the time how EDC loves the David Ojabo and a seventh round pick.
Oh, yeah. Throw
to move up this year and get a seventh in 2026.
Yeah, they love pick swaps. They do love pick swaps. Hey, coming up next, we stay in the AFC North. Mike Tomlin, give us his thoughts on Aaron Rodgers. Maybe we'll hear Kevin Stefanski talk about draft prospect. And we'll stack the defenses in the divisions. Northern Exposure next here on The Fan.
He's a free agent. As you guys know, he came to visit last Friday. We had a really productive day. He's been in this thing a long time. I've been in this thing a long time. But it's no substitute for intimacy and spending time together and getting to know one another in a non-competitive environment. So that was really good. But I don't have any new updates in terms of where the process is. We'll see where it leads us.
It's Mike Tomlin. I think that was at the NFL meetings talking about Aaron Rodgers. And we still await a decision for Aaron Rodgers.
Rodgers is going to have him smoking the peace pipe with him.
Yeah. It's Steelers or retirement. Now, it doesn't seem like anybody else is interested in Aaron Rodgers. So, Jason, what the hell's. Why are we still waiting on a decision from Aaron Rodgers?
Because he's Aaron Rodgers. I mean, what did he like? Because he's got. People are. Nothing's happened. He's been a terrible quarterback for 2.5 seasons. And people are still talking about him, and he's got Mike Tomlin, a Hall of Fame coach, sort of genuflecting to him during a league meeting, and he's got the Rooney family genuflecting to him, and he can keep milking it with his boy McAfee on TV because that's really all he wants to do. So that's why it's in his best interest. It feeds his ego. It certainly sounds like he's going to be a Steeler. I think it's going to be a catastrophic mistake. I do wonder if that is something that finally hastens Mike Tomlin's departure, because somebody's going to have to pay, and I think it's not just a young general manager. I think I got news for you. I don't think the guy who's banging on Rooney's door about this guy is a quarter. I don't think it's Omar Khan. I think it's Mike Tomlin.
I said this when the reports initially started. If Aaron Rodgers signs with the Steelers and it goes as dreadfully as we think, I'm cleaning house. Omar, Tomlin. Cleaning house.
Hey, the day he announces is going to be like Christmas coming early for me. I'm looking forward to it because it can't possibly go well. Let's go to Cleveland. And they have the second pick in the draft, correct? Kevin Stefanski. How about that pass rusher from Penn State, Abdul Carter?
You know, he went to LaSalle High School. I went to St. Joe's Prep, and that's like oil and water. So right away I said, hey, did you know where I went to high school? He said, yeah, I heard. I said, is this going to be a problem? They said no. So we broke the ice, but a very, very impressive young man. I know a lot of people that know him, whether going back to high school and certainly throughout his college, but really, really impressive young man.
I think it's a Philly thing, those high schools. By the way, there were some reports this morning, Jason, take them for what it's worth. I think it was Schefter, says that the Browns are leaning towards Travis Hunter with the second pick as we sit a little over 2 weeks away.
I think three things are in play there. I think Travis Hunter, I think Shador Sanders, and I think Abdul Carter are all in play. And let's just remember who owns that team.
Yeah, he's fun.
He selected Johnny Manziel, not the football people. This guy. So I think anybody who wants to go out on a limb on the Browns with Jimmy Haslam still in charge, this far removed from the draft, buyer beware. But all things being equal, I think, well, I mean, Hunter's a two-way player, but, you know, he'd become, you know, their best corner, because I don't think Denzel Ward's quite what he used to be.
That's where I was going to. What do you see his position being?
I think it's both. I think it depends where he goes. Like, I think if he goes to New England at four, I think he's playing a whole lot of offense because they're trying to prop the quarterback up, and Christian Gonzalez is a number one corner.
Well, but from his perspective, wouldn't you want to lean into receiver because they make a hell of a lot more money than a corner?
Oh, I think he wants to do both because he'll say I'm the complete and utter unicorn. And like we talk about Kyle Hamilton as a unicorn. I mean, if this guy is their number one corner and their number two wide receiver, what the hell is that worth? So I think more than anything else, he wants to go somewhere where he's going to be able to play as many snaps, and I don't mean offensive snaps or defensive snaps, I mean total snaps, as possible. But you look at this division right now, and we talk about the Ravens' offense leading the defense, and we have questions about some individual playmakers on defense. But I don't think there's any question that they've got the best defense in this division, and I'm not even sure if the Browns and Bengals have a defense.
I'd take the Browns over the Bengals.
Yeah, but I would too. Because especially because I think they're going to trade Trey Hendrickson for draft picks. Yeah, but like, I'm not feeling good about the Browns' defense.
No. They've got a transcendent player and not much else.
And look, if they take Abdul Carter, they might have two really – they might have bookends. But like, they've had pretty good bookends in the past. They've got a lot of other holes.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, the Ravens – and I expect the defense to get better under Zach Orr year two. Adding Chuck Pagano, that staff's going to help. I think the aggressiveness will ramp up. But we saw how much that defense improved down the stretch. Meanwhile, the Steelers' defense, which was their calling card, like how much longer can Cam Hayward play at that level?
I think they could. We talked, I'm not going to say a lot, but a fair amount about the Oregon D-tackle Derek Harmon last week. Like, if Derek Harmon's there for the Steelers, and Jackson Dart's there, and some receiver they loves there, I wouldn't be shocked if they took the D-tackle. I mean, they've invested in the offensive line. They've invested in the offense, and if they're just not sold on Jackson Dart and they'd rather take Jalen Milroe day two, then they might take the best D-tackle available because that Watt's been hurt. Some other kids haven't developed. Cam Hayward can't play forever. It wouldn't shock me if they took a D-tackle or an edge.
Is there any concern there, and I'm asking your opinion on this.
And I bring them up because they pick like a couple picks before the Ravens.
That TJ Watt, these injuries starting to mount, could it be like that he's still going to make impacts when he's out there, but not like he used to? Like, is he no longer defensive player of the year kind of guy?
It's kind of how it started to go for his brother, isn't it?
Yes.
And he's entering a contract here, right?
He is. He's got two left or one?
No, this is it. He's due $21 million base salary.
Just trying to think. I don't know that they have anybody else they necessarily have to franchise. So, yeah, I mean, look, they do not negotiate in season, and that's from ownership on down, and that's been that way since, you know, Chuck Knoll was there. So that's not on the table. So if they don't make a push to sign him by the time they get to Latrobe, Pennsylvania, then that's going to say more than anything they'd say publicly about maybe their concerns about him, and maybe he's got to play it out, and if they have to tag him to get something done, they tag him to get something done.
A reminder, the NFL draft starts 2 weeks from this Thursday, or 3 weeks from last Thursday, depending on how you want to look at it. Both are true, but it's coming. We got draft coming.
I think it's 10 days from 10 days from now.
Yes. Yeah, something, yeah.
About that.
Yeah. Yeah. 10 days from now, no.
10 days from 10 days from now.
Then the draft will be over.
20 days from now, it's over?
Yeah, because it's 2 weeks from Thursday. 26th?
What's today?
It's 7th. It's 3 days, so it's 17 days from now. Because it's 2 weeks from Thursday.
Could have just said that.
I could have.
Yeah. So it's 10 days from 10 days from now minus 3.
Yes. That's like 4 score and 7 years ago.
I mean, if you want to put it in the easiest terms.
You just Abe Lincoln'd it.
If you want to make people really know when it is.
Yeah, that was your Gettysburg address right there.
10 days from now minus 3.
Hey, coming up next, we get back to the Orioles. And that was some horse bleep fundamental baseball over the weekend in Kansas City. We recap next here on The Fan.